Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday. No advertisers on this episode. Julie Kelly with her phenomenal new book about January 6th and the War on Terror. We've been covering the story extensively, but there's stuff Julie shares that was not shared by any of our guests this week. I encourage you to listen to it all the way through. Thank you for supporting our show, charliekirk.com/support. There's no advertisers on this episode thanks to your supporting of our show at charliekirk.com/support. Thank you, Donald from Virginia. Thank you, Jill from California, Tammy from Pennsylvania, Mark from Texas, and Andrew from Ohio. charliekirk.com/support. When you guys support us, you allow us, as we're building a new studio and expanding our operation. So thank you so much for that. If you want to email me directly, you could do so, freedom@charliekirk.com. That's freedom@charliekirk.com. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win the American culture war. That's tpusa.com. I encourage you to start a high school or college chapter today. That's right. We are in high schools. So if you have a high school student that's being propagandized or indoctrinated in your life, or maybe you are a high school student, I highly encourage you to get involved with the largest educational organization in the country dedicated to passing down American values to future generations at tpusa.com. Julie Kelly is here. Buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Okay, with us right now is Julie Kelly. She's done an amazing job. Her new book, How Democrats Use the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right. Julie, thank you so much for joining the Charlie Kirk Show.
Hey, Charlie. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
So we've had on this week Darren Beatty and Ben Weingarten, and you've done an amazing job covering this over the last couple months. Summarize the thesis, because it's very precise what you have here. How Democrats use the Capitol protest to launch a war on terror. What is the war on terror that's unfolding in front of our eyes?
Well, you can see this, especially yesterday when you had Vice President Kamala Harris tick off past terror attacks and then add January 6, 2021 to the end. Now, let's set aside how egregious, outlandish, and how demeaning it is to the people who were murdered at those various days on 9/11 and, of course, Pearl Harbor. But this gives them justification to turn the tools of terrorism, the war on terror, which has been aimed at foreign adversaries, foreign threats, to domestic threats. And those domestic threats are Donald Trump, the Republican Party, the Republican information ecosystem, and of course, the millions, tens of millions of Trump voters and supporters. So when Christopher Wray designated under oath in Congress in March, he designated the four-hour disturbance at the Capitol a domestic terror attack. That enabled the entire national security state, law enforcement, FBI, et cetera, local law enforcement, to then treat the defendants, treat the event, and anyone tied to the events of that day as a domestic terror threat.
And so there's been a lot made of that word terror in the last couple of days, unnecessarily. I shouldn't say that, meaning just, I think, unintentionally is what I mean. It seems as if people are asking, was this a terrorist attack? Which I do not believe it was. I think the only terrorist attack was the pipe bombs, and we don't know anything about that. And let's just kind of get down to the bones of what a terror attack is. A terror attack is trying to inflict mass harm on a population for a religious, political, or ideological purpose, right? A terror attack is not getting in a scuffle with a police officer, where you should go to jail if you do that. But that is not a terror attack. A terror attack would be Timothy McVeigh. A terror attack is Ted Kaczynski. A terror attack is 9/11. Those are terror attacks. Most commonly, plane hijackings, bombs, the attempt for indiscriminate damage, loss of life for a political or socioeconomic or religious agenda. Julie, why is that such an important distinction? Why for example, did Tucker Carlson focus on that, pushing back against the characterization of what happened that day as a terror attack? Pipe bombs aside, because I actually think that was a terror attack or a potential, whatever that was, right? We don't really know. Or can you talk about that? Because you use the word war on terror against the political right, but was January 6th a terror attack?
By no means was it a terror attack. Until we find out that it potentially was a terror attack organized and executed by our own government. And when I say that, Charlie, and especially if you had Darren Beatty on, we know what this FBI is capable of, right? We could talk a little bit for a minute about the Whitmer kidnapping plot. This case is unraveling for the government. It is exposing the FBI's central role in concocting that plot, luring men into that plot, organizing all of the optics about that, and then setting these men up to buy explosives from an undercover FBI agent. That case is unraveling quickly. The top three agents have been removed from the witness list. One has been fired. The informant, one of the key informants, is a convicted felon several times over who committed at least two crimes while he was working with the FBI to entrap these men. So it's important to sort of keep an eye on this Whitmer case because it also is tied to January 6th. Now, what we know, Charlie, and the Newsweek story that posted on Monday was very revelatory in terms of contradicting Christopher Wray and the Democrats' claim that they were caught flat-footed, they didn't have intelligence, they weren't prepared, it will never happen again. Contrary to that, we now know that they had a half a dozen elite FBI forces stationed at Quantico the weekend before January 6th. Who knows what they were doing, training probably to execute what happened on that day. But contrary to Jeffrey Rosen, the acting attorney general's testimony as well, who said he deployed those assets after the violence started, we now know that those assets were deployed the morning of, including having agents near the DNC and RNC headquarters where these alleged pipe bombs were discovered right before the first breach of the perimeter of the Capitol complex took place. So when you add all of these things together, Charlie, you know this, there's no coincidences. This was coordinated. So if it was an attack, it was not an attack by Trump supporters. It was not even an attack by alleged militia groups. This looks more and more like it was an orchestrated attack that was concocted and executed by our own government agencies.
So I'm sympathetic to that. I want to walk through that with you. Because I think my response is okay, but you've done a lot of good thinking and research on this. The book is January 6th, How Democrats Used the Capitol Protest to Launch a War on Terror Against the Political Right by Julie Kelly. And Julie has been going on Tucker Show many times the last couple months. And this entire kind of January 6th saga has, in the unfolding of the last couple months, has been a very interesting thing, a very interesting study in the Overton Window. Because what started as kind of a radical, I don't want to say radical, but people didn't want to touch it. It was radioactive. Like, oh, yeah, I mean, the cake's already baked. All of a sudden now you're starting to see more and more mainstream voices start to embrace this. And it took a couple window movers like yourself, Julie Kelly, Darren Beatty, Ben Weingarten, Tucker Carlson. And now you have senators openly asking questions about this. So you were saying, in essence, maybe January 6th was more of a intelligence operation or some sort of a domestic attempt to try and do something, whatever that might be. I'll let you fill in the gaps. But let me play devil's advocate. And I just want to say again, I'm sympathetic to your argument, is that people will go to the FBI website. I'm there right now, FBI.gov, and they'll see hundreds, if not thousands, of pictures of people that are pushing back on barricades or smashing windows. You could look at some of the charging documents and they'll say there's no way that this could have been planned by the government. It looks like thousands of people that independently committed crimes or hundreds of people. What would you say to that? What would be the pushback to that? How could the government possibly stage anything like this? It looks to be such an overwhelming operation for anyone to be able to do.
So this is a great question, Charlie, because I think that that is a lot of Americans' general view or grasp of what happened that day. So what we have to ask is, number one, why did Nancy Pelosi and Muriel Bowser intentionally keep the Capitol grounds, the entire complex, not just the building, the grounds around it, were technically shut off to the public? So why, if that was the case, did they deny offers, including by the president, to have thousands of National Guardsmen on the Capitol grounds, informing people that the grounds were closed? That's something that never happened. And securing even the streets. Why did they not block off the streets from the Ellipse to the Capitol grounds? You had tens of thousands of people walking after Trump's speech. He wrapped up around 1:10, 1.7 miles to the Capitol complex. So they were not aware that the Capitol grounds or even the building had been shut off. And as you know, Charlie, I'm sure you've talked to people who were there. They couldn't even get cell service to know what was happening. They wanted to be outside the Capitol or inside the building too, feeling that that was their right as citizens. And of course, that happens all the time when there's things like this happening, to see exactly what was going to happen with the joint session of Congress. My belief is that the reason why they did not want National Guardsmen there is because DC Metro, Capitol Police, and these FBI units, we know hundreds of elite forces now, were on Capitol grounds in the building that day. I believe primarily because DC Metro and Capitol Police had their marching orders, which was, Charlie, to start attacking the crowd assembled outside the building early on, which prompted a lot of what you're saying, confrontations, physical brawls with police officers. These officers were not unarmed. They were not unprepared. If you watch the videos and you see photographs and eyewitness testimony, you had dozens of DC police and Capitol Police who were clad head to toe in riot gear, unrecognizable, no badges on them, really no official signage or anything that would show them as police officers. They had riot shields on. They had face masks, and some of them had gas masks. They had gloves on. You could not, they were head to toe black. They started throwing explosive devices, including flashbangs, which is a stun grenade. When it hits the ground, makes a very loud explosive noise and a big flash of light. Capitol Police had rifles that they put pepper balls into, which when they're shot into the crowd, releases this puff of pepper gas. DC police, and this was confirmed by the DC chief and congressional testimony, used something called sting balls. This is a ball that when it hits the ground, releases a bunch of rubber bullets. Now there's plenty of open source video that shows crowds of people assembled outside. They weren't trying to get into the building at this point. This was after the initial breach of some Proud Boys, some informants, some people who still haven't been accounted for, like Ray Epps, breaching the perimeter at that point. These are the Trump people who actually left Trump's speech to go there. So you see the crowd turn on the police officers. This is when you see a lot of the physical confrontations with police. This is why they didn't want National Guardsmen there, to turn to other officers and say, why are you deploying these? Why are you throwing things at the crowd? Why are you tackling protesters? Why are you punching them? Why are you kicking them? One interesting case is a man named Thomas Webster. This was his first political rally that he attended. He's a 20-year veteran of the New York Police Department. He also provided security detail for Gracie Mansion. He got into a confrontation with police, a physical confrontation. But what he testifies to and what video shows is he watched for about 10 or 15 minutes as he saw Capitol Police and DC Metro Police attacking people outside the building. And this included shoving one woman at least twice as she was just standing there outside of the barriers. So Thomas Webster runs up to this line. He confronts one of his brothers in blue, or a few of them, starts screaming at them, calling them commie MFers, and screaming at them, you're attacking Americans. This is BS. This is et cetera, et cetera. Then he challenges the police officer who's doing this to take off all of the disguise that he has as riot gear. And this is when they get into a confrontation. Well, Thomas Webster was charged with attacking, assaulting police officers. His trial is in a few months. He has notified the government, the Justice Department, that he will claim self-defense again and defense of others against excessive unlawful police force as to justify what he did that day. Now, here's what's interesting, Charlie. Prosecutors have already come back in a separate case and asked the judge to prevent defendants from using self-defense against excessive unlawful police force that day as a reason for why they did what they did, charged with attacking police officers. Were there people who assaulted or attacked police officers who were unprompted, who shouldn't have? Yes. And they have all been charged. And some of them have been in jail for over a year awaiting, or at least a year, coming up on a year, awaiting their trials. These are people who haven't been convicted of anything. They're under pretrial detention orders. And so this is a highly overlooked aspect of what happened on January 6th. And the people who want to condemn Nancy Pelosi as if, oh, gee, it was just an oversight that they didn't have enough security that day. It was all intentional. And now we know that there were hundreds of FBI agents. And the bigger question is now at this point, who hasn't been charged and why, instead of the 720 plus alleged domestic terrorists who already have been charged?
So if you were to speculate, which I know that you try not to do, what do you, the day before, the night of January 5th, what do you think the plans were from the intelligence apparatus? What do you think they wanted to have happen? Walk us through what the equation you think they had. They said, okay, there's going to be 50,000 people. They're going to be angry. Congress will be meeting. Uh-huh. Do you think what I'm really getting at is how much of what happened on January 6th was an act of unexpected pandemonium and what happens when you get thousands of people? And how much of it was actually metaphorically put pen to paper beforehand? What is your speculation in that?
I think the majority of it was orchestrated and planned ahead of time by government agencies. I think some of it was people who were there to cause trouble. And certainly those who got caught up in a mob mentality. Now, but let's talk about a pivotal moment that afternoon. One that our president and everyone else overlooked yesterday is the shooting and killing of Ashley Babbitt. That happened about 2:44 that afternoon. When that news, and you could see video, when that news made its way through the crowd, and some people actually saw Ashley Babbitt's body being carried out, not very respectfully, I will note, by police officers, that really incited the crowd as well. So that, I mean, that is majorly overlooked as a factor of inciting this mob that day or inciting the protesters that day. So you have all of these things happening at one time. And certainly, Charlie, we also know from video that you had Capitol Police officers who opened up the doors on the Senate side and let at least 300 protesters come in. So why were they allowing people in? Why were they not arresting people? Why were they not making announcements from the scaffolding and everywhere else? Hey, this building is closed. The property is closed. The grounds are closed. If you don't depart in the next half an hour, you're all going to be arrested. None of that happened. So why did they not handle it like a normal situation? And to your point, the night before, the pipe bomber allegedly set the pipe bombs, and you had Ray Epps and other people encouraging people to go into the building the next day. Charlie, the people who wanted the proceeding shut down that day were Democrats, because you had senators and Republicans who were going to successfully object to the certification of six states and call for this 10-day audit. They had enough senators. They had enough House members. It's the Democrats who wanted that shut down, not the Republicans. So when you start with that premise, a lot of this starts to make sense.
And that's hard for a lot of Americans to believe, Julie, because mm-hmm. what you're getting at is basically a political domestic false flag operation. Is it fair to use that term, false flag? That's a big term to use about our government.
It's a huge term, and it's scary to think of our government that would be capable of doing this. But Charlie, as you know too, someone who's covered the Russia collusion hoax and someone who has really been a longtime supporter of the FBI and even the war on terror and all the tools, the Patriot Act, et cetera, trusting that our institutions would handle that authority responsibly, and seeing that they haven't, they've exploited it, they've abused it, and even worse, Charlie, they've gotten away with it. When no one paid a price for using political propaganda to betray and mislead, a special court, a FISA court, used to go after foreign terrorists, and when they used a dossier compiled by a foreign operative paid by the DNC and Hillary Clinton campaign, and you had Jim Comey, Sally Gates, Andrew McCabe, et cetera, sign off on this warrant that said that the evidence was legit and they needed to spy on Carter Page, et cetera, and no one paid a price, they knew that they could get away with using any domestic authority, foreign or domestic terrorism tools to go up against Donald Trump and Americans. So this would be the natural trajectory of Crossfire Hurricane, Robert Mueller, and then, of course, impeachment. They've gotten away with every single thing that they've done. So why wouldn't they put together at least the majority of the operation of what we saw on January 6th?
And so there's also something to be said about not every part of the security apparatus was read into this. This would be why Ray Epps probably was put on the website and then taken down, that there was probably a right hand, left hand thing. And, you know, in any prosecutor worth their salt will tell you that you'll usually find more about the original crime in the cover up than actually in investigating the crime. What have you seen as far as attempts of covering this up, such as not allowing the 14,000 hours of footage, deleting Ray Epps from the website? Please go ahead.
Right. Not only concealing 14,000 hours of surveillance video from the public, but also doing whatever they can to conceal that from defendants and their defense attorneys. Every single clip, even a 30-minute clip used in, say, a detention hearing, is under a protective order. There are very strict rules about how defendants can look at the evidence against them. They have to have someone there to view it. They can't download it. They can't share it. Now, why is the government, why is the DOJ being so protective? If indeed this was the worst terror attack, comparable to 9/11, Pearl Harbor, Oklahoma City bombing, why can't we see all of the evidence? This would be surveillance video starting at noon through 8 o'clock that day, inside and outside, every angle of the Capitol buildings, adjacent buildings, and Capitol grounds. Why can't we see that? Why are they being so suspicious of it? Why are they concealing the names of officers who allegedly were attacked that day? They only use initials in charging documents, and they are not even going to tell the defendants the name of these officers. They can't face their accusers. Every constitutional protection that we cherish has been completely violated and destroyed, not just by this Justice Department, but by the D.C. District Court, who is going along with every request that prosecutors have. I mean, we have political prisoners in this country. We've had over 100 defendants who have been denied bail simply for the fact of their involvement in what happened on January 6th. So we're talking about treating people like terrorists. That is exactly what is happening, including over 100 people who haven't even been convicted, and many of them don't even have a trial date yet, Charlie. So you could see the comparisons between what we wanted to use to go after terrorists after 9/11 and now to go after not just Trump, but millions of Americans.
I mean, you would imagine it would be a 14th Amendment violation of equal protection. You would imagine that. And I think that a lot of these lawyers are going to try this. But to be honest, most of these individuals that are on trial, they don't have good attorneys. They just don't. And I'm not going to breach any conversations I've had, but I've just heard secondhand of how awful these arguments these lawyers are making. They're basically like, just plead guilty, serve a couple years. Like am I right, Julie? That's basically the advice a lot of these guys are getting.
It is, because, you know, most of these people have never been in trouble with the law at all. So they were just completely shocked. You have the FBI show up, raid your house, point guns at your wife, at your children, drag you out, arrest you. Don't even know what you're charged with. Some of them didn't even know it had to do with January 6th. They can't afford the six figures plus to hire a criminal defense attorney in DC because, of course, every case is handled in DC. So a lot of them had public defenders, and they certainly don't share the political views of their clients, and it shows.
Yeah, It's a real injustice. And a lot of this is a revenge campaign. Make no mistake. This is an open air, 700 person, therapeutic revenge campaign for people that hate themselves, hate their lives, and want to try and put on a show trial because they're mad Donald Trump got 4 years in the White House. It's part of this. They get some sort of really sick, sadistic pleasure in making some sort of 45-year-old from Western Kentucky have to squirm for his life in solitary confinement in prison. They really do. And they also want to ensure he doesn't get four more years, because that's what show trials are all about. Show trials, you know how they're going to end. But they publicized them in the Soviet Union for a reason, because they tried to use it to stunt future activity against the regime. Julie, talk a little bit about your experience this last year, how you got into this story. Very few people are covering it. It was considered to be radioactive or fringe at first. Now it's very interesting and increasingly mainstream. Just tell us a little bit about that. I'm super interested.
As I was watching it, it just didn't make sense to me. I think it just smelled right away. And all my red flags after following not just Russiagate, but all the lockdown policies, how that all was orchestrated and came together. So I did not share, you know, the outrage about what was happening, the insurrection and all of that. And so I think I was just skeptical from the get-go. I also viewed it as a way to stop any claims or investigations into election fraud, which, of course, it successfully did. As I was saying before, it was successful because then senators came back, and a few senators who were planning to help object to these electoral results in the six contested states backed off. And of course, then Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were certified the next day about 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I think I just started following it from there. But I became aware of the people who were charged and hearing what judges were saying in court, denying bail to people. The first story I wrote about was Cui Griffin, the Cowboys for Trump guy, who was charged with trespassing. He didn't even go inside the building. He was lawfully outside. Charged with trespassing, and a judge denied him bail based on the fact that he did not believe that Joe Biden was the legitimately elected president, and therefore he would not follow any of the laws of the government. And so he was considered a flight risk and danger to the community. So it just kind of started from there. And I opened up a PACER account, which I never had. I'm not an attorney. But I started reading the charging documents. I started listening to court hearings and hearing what these judges were saying. Charlie, when you use the word sadistic, and I want to make this very clear, that is not hyperbole. That is the term I use consistently. It is not just people like Joe Biden, Merrick Garland, who might be gratified at the pain that they're bringing. I'm talking about line prosecutors and what they are saying in court. I'm talking about federal judges who are so gratified and so pleased when they are able to sentence someone charged with a Class B misdemeanor to 3 months in jail. I'm talking about the media who has destroyed these people's lives by tying them to the so-called insurrection. I mean, I could go on and on. My book talks about some of these heartbreaking stories, literally things that have brought me to tears listening to these defendants beg for mercy from these sadistic prosecutors yes. and sadistic judges. I mean, I'm not a crier, but there are a couple of cases where literally I was in tears covering what I was hearing. And so I talk about some of those moving accounts in the book. And I think that that's really what has driven a lot of my reporting.
Well, you've done a great job. And I just want to reemphasize this. These are very twisted people that hate mm-hmm. Trump so much. And this is as close as they can get towards exercising.
They hate us.
They hate us. They hate America. They hate the flag. They hate all of it. But this is as close as they can get into the orbit of exercising this massive spiritual gap they have. It's that it really is that dark. They think they're good people by doing it, but also they kind of get off. They get gratified by seeing some welder from Michigan who came in and took a selfie in the Capitol be in solitary confinement.
That's right.
Okay, 45 seconds. Tell us about the book. We didn't really talk much about it. Just give more people a direct tease and pitch why they need to buy it.
Thank you so much, Charlie, for having me on and pitching the book. So I give a very detailed timeline and some minute by minute of what happened that day. I talk about potential FBI involvement. I talk about what police did on that day. I talk about the DC gulag and people who've been held in solitary confinement. And I look ahead to what we can expect in 2022, not just by the DOJ prosecution, but of course by the Select House Committee as well.
Very, very good. Thank you, Julie, so much for joining us. January 6th, everyone go pick up a copy. Help her in the Amazon charts. Research needs to be rewarded. Let me say that again. Research needs to be rewarded. This book is well-researched. And on our side, there's not a lot of people doing that kind of research. Obviously, the New Yorker isn't going to do this type of research. You know, they're too busy, I don't know, trying to find out the QAnon shaman's diet in prison or something. Right. This is the actual research that is legitimate and it's necessary. And if you learn something this hour, then buy Julie's book because that's how you support research. And then maybe you'll learn some more. Okay. Thank you so much, Julie. Really, really appreciate it. We'll have to have you back on sometime soon. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.